We present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Holt.
All right, you've made a mistake. Let's not turn it into an embarrassment. Hello and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from the Skegness News, read by Brian Perkins.
A humble apology to all Liverpool FC football fans in Skegness. In last week's news, we stated that their anthem was the song You'll Never Walk Again.
Thanks to Michelle Varney of the East Midlands for sending us that. Please now meet the teams. Welcome first, please, on my right, Andy Hamilton and Linda Smith. And opposite them on my left, Alan Corran and Jeremy Hardy. Andy, whose fortunes may have begun to brighten up?
Well, this is presumably our beloved leader, Tony Blair, who, you know, very much in tune with our confessional culture. He admitted to mistakes, but he felt that, you know, we should move on and achieve closure. And it was apparently an impressive, if slightly smelly, speech. But
does sweat a lot for a thin lad, doesn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah.
Do you think it was a mistake, Andy, for him to wear that sauna in a suit that he got from the Innovations catalogue?
Yeah.
Busy Prime Minister, no time for a relaxing sauna, no problem. Have a sauna while making a keynote speech, no one will notice.
Shirt needs a spin dryer, really, isn't it?
You know what it is. You know what it is. All the high street fashions are made in Far Eastern sweatshops, and these days they're actually coming with the sweat built in.
I tell you what worried me intensely about the speech was he's developed this theme about, well, with hindsight, he says, I wouldn't have sanctioned the dome. And I really hope this hindsight business doesn't catch on with politicians, because I'm not sure I could stomach Mrs. Thatcher saying, well, of course, looking back, destroying Britain's industrial base was probably a mistake. If I had my time again, you know, and Slobodan Milosevic saying, well, you feel so silly when you think about it. But ethnic cleansing seemed like a good idea at the time. Because I don't quite understand how the dome was such a deceptive idea.
Sounded so good at the time, I suppose, when someone said, yes, well, on this toxic waste ground, we'll build a big shed with nothing in it.
And
how could it fail?
All we need to break even is 12 million visitors a year, which is actually an extraordinary, extraordinary amount. But, it was very funny. I was... As we were coming down, as I arrived from the station, there were lots of Labour politicians getting into big swanky cars, but I did see Lord Faulkner walking towards the station. And we were speculating earlier that he's probably thinking, I had a chauffeur when I came.
I was rather hoping he'd be walking towards the sea.
He did go on, Blair, about how much he was listening, didn't he? Did you notice that, Andy? It was sort of, I'm listening to the road hauliers, but I'm also listening to the National Health, and I'm also listening to the pensioners. You think, sure, if all the voices he's listening to are actually real. You know. I'm listening to the Emperor Charlemagne. He says, go on, towards the glory. I'm listening to Catherine the Great, Empress of all the Russias. I'm trying not to listen to Jack the Ripper. Stop, stop, not listening.
Blair's conference speech was a huge success with Labour delegates, but was marred only by his excessive sweating. Political analysts always assumed it was only the Tories who used to jeopardise their election hopes because of heavy losses from the pits.
Hey.
2 points to Andy. Linda, who clobbered Slobodan?
Oh, it's the man who... Well, the papers bafflingly keep referring to as the opposition leader in Serbia. He sounds a bit like he runs a chain of pound shops. It's called Kostanica or something like that. And he's basically won, but only in the old-fashioned sense of getting more votes. But but Slobodan's not very impressed with this. And he's saying, oh, no, I wasn't ready. I said best of three, surely. And so he's not going without a fight.
Surely we should be doing something for the people in Yugoslavia. I mean, can't we just randomly scatter cluster bombs all over the Balkans and blow up embassies and stuff?
After President Milosevic's defeat on Sunday, the opposition in Yugoslavia have so far resisted calls for a second round of voting. It said the Republic of China may offer the president a safe haven, though so far he's wisely declined their offer of a room in the Chinese embassy. 2 points to Linda. Jeremy, which veteran campaigners refused to be browned off this week?
This is the pensions thing.
It is.
Labour suffered, or the government suffered, a bit of a kicking off of Barbara Castle and Rodney Bickerstaff. And it's interesting that the unions are doing very little for their members, but considering, you know, they're all about to retire, they've suddenly gotten very interested in pensions. I understand that. They won't support their members in struggle or make a strike official, but they've suddenly got interested in pensions, which, fair play, they should be. But the government is letting the state pension wither, and the aim is ultimately to replace it with a system of vouchers, which can only be exchanged for cat food and and fish fingers and that. But obviously the answer is, because people are saying, well, there's no point giving all this money to rich pensioners, but the thing is, with rich pensioners, you can claw back the money with taxation in the same way that with poor pensioners, you claw back the money using the lottery. But the other thing that's really irksome about all this is the government is trying to steer us into making our own provision for our old age. And you're all a bit woozy in the afternoon watching an old Bette Midler film. Not Bette Midler. Bette Davis, more likely. Or an old Barbara Castle musical. And on comes someone like Frank Winston and says, "Hello, you old bastard, you're going to die." And you think, oh, my God, that's true. You get a carriage. But they're trying to get you to get all these bloody pensions. So you go and see the independent financial advisor and you get a pension and a life insurance where you give you a shiny folder for your statements with a picture of old people laughing on the cover.
Jill Whitfield's worse, though. She doesn't nag you to get a pension. She nags you to pay for your own funeral.
I've never understood how those people get into the bath sideways. You know, with the little door open. And they're all people I remember from Crossroads 30 years ago. But they have a little door in the side of the bath at 3:30 every afternoon. They get in. But they always get in their bathing costumes, presumably because gravity has taken its toll of that. But I turn on to see nude octogenarians from Crossroads. It's a lonely life, one way or another.
2 points to Jeremy. Alan, your piece of music. Alan, to be or not to be, for whom is that the question?
Oh, no, that's the dullest question. What, the Danes voting on whether to keep the euro?
Yes, 2 points to Alan.
That's like... like taking a referendum among the Belgians about whether they prefer plaid slippers to the floppy pants.
If you live in Denmark, voting on the euro is a heady social whirl. What else? They've got lager.
We've done it.
That's it, isn't it?
They've got that statue. The statue of the little boy pissing, which is...
No, it's a mermaid.
No, that's Belgian. Belgian's government.
It's a mermaid. It's not piss. It's the sea.
Are there any Danish people in? Because we could come across as a bit patronising.
Yes, Thursday evening, Danes are gathered around their TVs, eagerly awaiting the results of a vote that an incredible 95% of the population were expected to take part in. And as soon as the Danish Big Brother was over, they turned over to catch the Euro result on them. We start round two with an item seen in the Sunday Times.
Ireland's Nigerian-born Monopoly champion, Ekumdeo Badmus, 37, from Dublin, has changed his name to Ekumdeo O'Badmus, to sound more Irish.
Thanks to Mrs. V. Ingo from Heaton for that. Linda, which poorly not-so-golden girl turned the Olympics into a five-ring circus?
Oh. Poorly...
Not so golden girl turned the Olympics into a five-ring.
So she wasn't so golden, perhaps she won a silver medal?
No.
This is Romanian, there is a headache pill.
Oh. These little bonsai kids.
Yeah, well, it's very, very unfair. They do these somersaults on the bar, but to them it's as wide as the Brighton Promenade. Because they're tiny. I mean, they're the size of fleas. And she had a bit of a headache and had one aspirin. And, of course, being that small, it completely did for her.
The thing is, if there's going to be a level playing field, you shouldn't be allowed to train or have a special diet or know any of the rules.
That,
Also, I was reading the big problem they have in detecting the drug cheats is the athletes know when the Olympics are going to be. So they can schedule their drug taking in such a way that by the time the actual event comes round, you know, their blood is clear of any traces. Obviously, the thing to do is to have a surprise Olympics. Wake them all up at 3 a.m. and say, right, we're going to do it now. Then you catch all the drug cheats then.
Because it's not natural to run that fast. You'd have to be on something, otherwise you'd be out of your mind, wouldn't you? To do that. It's not normal. Look at their bodies. That's never right. They've got these huge, great bodies, tiny little heads. I should think their genitals must look like jewellery, couldn't they?
But you can tell the sprinters are on drugs because drugs make you paranoid, and you'd only run that fast if you thought someone was after you.
Members of the Romanian squad have returned their gold medals after the Olympic Committee decided to strip gymnast Andreea Redocan of her gold medal, even though they accepted she'd only taken a cold remedy. Ms. Redocan's blood was found to contain traces of pseudoephedrine. That's the kind of ephedrine that goes around quoting Proust. Jeremy, your piece of music.
You're having my baby. What a lovely way of saying how much you love me.
Jeremy, why might gay couples soon be saying, hello, Dolly?
You can do a thing now where, because you see, ladies have 2 X chromosomes, right, and men have an X and a Y, which means men are only half men and half ladies. But if ladies have a Y chromosome, you can take that chromosome. No, hang on.
Jeremy Hardy.
Yeah, no.
Jeremy Hardy, man of science.
I'm sorry if this is going over anybody's heads, but you take the Y from one gentleman's chromosome.
Now that's
bits.
Countdown you're doing now. No. I'll have a Y chromosome, please, Carol.
You take...
Now we're listening, Jen, because this is going to be good.
You take... The gentleman has to divert himself in a private place, presumably, right, to make some into a little flask, which usually has sterile on it, which isn't encouraging.
I don't think it does, actually, Jeremy. No, I think just an item of clothing now will do.
All right. Okay, so one gentleman donates some trousers, and the other gentleman donates his mother's wedding ring, and you can make a baby in a laboratory or something. Is that it?
Yes, more or less.
Gay babies, isn't it? It's babies born going clang, clang, clang when the trolley...
More than that, you can actually transplant it into the stomach. You remove half a man... Personally, I'd rather have a square meal and get pregnant. never mind breastfeeding. But it's like an ectopic pregnancy. They take away part of the stomach and you take this thing that Jeremy's built in his small back room with the aid of Playboy and a stomach pump converted for the purpose, and you implant it in a bloke. And before, God knows where it comes out of, but eventually this thing appears which you love and cherish forever.
Men are going to be so good at having babies. We are. All those years of putting up with women saying how difficult it is. How unpopular have I made myself there? Pretty good.
It'd be great having 2 gay dads, though. You'd just be taken to musicals all the time. And also... The competition between 2 dads would be great because you say, Dad, look what Dad's bought me. Look, he's got me a rubber dinghy. Oh, he's got your rubber dinghy. I say, right, we're going down to Argos to get you an aircraft carrier then. So good. But, why do gay...
What? You and I could raise a family. You have to be gay.
What? That's what you said.
Any 2 blokes.
Any 2 blokes can raise a family. But what happened to the days when gay men just got married and joined the Conservative Party?
Scientists who previously produced Dolly the Sheep have now developed a technique allowing 2 gay men both to become natural biological fathers of the same child. The revelation that gay men could be fathers was hailed as a miracle, except in the Catholic Church, where such ordinations have been going on for years. Andy, who is no longer King of the Swingers?
King of the Swingers?
I know, Andy.
Go on, Lynn.
Do you know?
No, I don't.
This will be the story about the poor little monkeys.
Oh.
That are all being...
They're being rendered extinct.
terrible, really.
But it's not just gorilla. I mean, the sadness of the story, isn't it, that all the primates are in danger of extinction, aren't they? And the only place you'll be able to find them is in zoos. I thought that was the bigger picture. It's turning into panorama.
We all feel sort of close to monkeys, because the lovely thing with monkeys is that they're very close relatives, but you don't have to see them at Christmas. And I think that's what we love about them, really.
Monkeys aren't apes, though, are they? They're different. They're different because the monkey is an insect and the ape is a fish.
Have the Open University not approached yet?
Mankind's closest relations are on the verge of extinction through indifference, as anyone who heard the Gallagher Brothers' last album will fully understand. Linda, your piece of music. Linda, who was saying sayonara to the old bag.
Sayonara to the tea bag. This is, in fact, a Japanese, very clever people, who have come up with this idea of tea in the form of tiny little heart-shaped pills that apparently taste better than tea bags or ordinary tea, take 10 minutes to brew, and cost about 500 times more than a tea bag. But that efficiency really isn't in it. I've been thinking about this. I thought, well, why would you do that? I can't see any practical benefit. But, of course, in Japan, the fact that it's so small is very beneficial because there's no room in Japan. It's so overcrowded. In Japan, a tea bag is a duvet. Seriously. So in Japan, it's a boom, but I don't think it will catch on over here.
Also, there are going to be no more chimps to advertise in very soon.
People in chimp costumes.
It's a marketing nightmare. They're going to have hedgehogs advertising tea pills.
The Japanese scientist behind the tea tablet, which works by compressing the maximum number of leaves into the tiniest possible space, said that he came up with the idea while working in Britain designing train carriages for Connex South Central. Scores at the end of round three are Andy and Linda 11, but Alan and Jeremy still in the lead with 14 points. And before we start the final round, here's an item spotted on the York District Hospital messaging system.
Does anyone have a guillotine they would like to donate to the head and neck reception?
Thanks to Trevor Hare, who's chief technician in cytology, for that. Andy, who started stirring it this week when she gave up pricking eggs in favour of pricking egos.
Oh, this is the chef wars. This is... Excuse the tone of my voice. This is Delia Smith revealing a hitherto undisclosed sort of bitchy side to her character, getting stuck into the other TV chefs. And actually, I'm about to launch myself into a career as a TV chef, doing a program called It's Only Food. It's just packet opening and eating. Because... since when has food been worth, you know, wall-to-wall 9 hours worth of national television? Anyway, I didn't follow it. Delia complained that Anthony Worrell Thompson was ugly or something, I don't know.
Controversial view there, Delia.
And he said that she was cold and frigid and... I don't know, I lost track.
She's a barroom hellraiser, Delia. It's all coming out. She was out on a bender with Thora Heard. It's just true. So you've got her all wrong. And she met up with 2 Telegraph journalists who won their confidence by pretending they were trying to score some Arctic roll.
Actually, what I would watch is if they were doing Chef Wars properly and Don King promoted Delia King versus Ainsley Harriott, you know, 10 rounds, and they got to, you know, hit each other with ladles or something.
What you want is the antique food show, really, isn't it? Here's a pork pie I made in 1834. Where did you find it? In the attic. How did it come into your family? Well, we nicked it in the big...
Conflate
everything.
Changing food would be good, where Carol Smiley comes in and completely replaces somebody's meal with a different meal. This is what do you think of that?
Delia insisted she now wants to be thought of as a bitch. So in her next series, she'll be lying under the table, licking scraps of food from the floor, and occasionally sticking her nose into the groin of the male guests. So she also panned colleague Anthony Worrell Thompson for having unduly sweaty palms. Mr. Worrell Thompson is so upset, he's giving up his cookery career to become leader of the Labour Party. Linda, why isn't an actor's life all it's quacked up to be?
This is Arthur Smith Duck, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. In, I'm sure, the very splendid entertainment, Arthur Smith sings Leonard Cohen, probably very excellent, I should think.
Music to top yourself to, wasn't it, Leonard Cohen?
It would encourage you to top yourself to prevent you from going to see Ben Norton and Andrew Lloyd Webber's musical.
Yeah. The two of them together, perhaps they cancel each other out and it becomes fantastic. You know, like matter and antimatter. Now, so you're the scientist here, I don't know what I'm talking about.
Very easy to mock things I don't understand.
So, well, basically, yeah. They found that there's a duck in it, just to liven it up a bit, really, because, as you say, there aren't many dance floor hits in Leonard Cohen, to be honest. It is like listening to your nan at Christmas moaning really, really slowly. It's just really not very exciting. But they've got a duck that they bring in on a tea trolley, but they've discovered that the duck costs about four times more than just an actor would cost. So now they're having an actor in a duck outfit. It's a lot cheaper, and the duck has to have its own trailer and has to wash its feathers in Evian water, and it just keeps going off in a huff and getting married to Brad Pitt, and it's just a nightmare.
It was the agent. So you go straight to the duck. As soon as you get into agents, it's a nightmare. The duck would have been glad to do it just for the exposure. I was thinking about your nan doing Leonard Cohen going, "Well, Suzanne takes me down," and then on a Thursday,
place
near the river. But then on a Thursday, Shirley takes me to Boots to get me liniment. Now Shirley's son's away at university doing land economy, I think.
Anyway, I saw Mrs. Middleditch. You do know her. You do know her. You met her when you were one.
Two things I think we should say. First of all, we don't know how good this duck is. It might be worth the money. You know, it might be very talented. And also, the version I heard is that actually the duck walked. Because it hadn't been explained to him that he was playing a duck. And he feels he's being typecast. And, you know, the moment he saw that the part had a duckish quality, that was it.
Of course, it might not even have been a duck. It could have been, say, a sort of Robert De Niro-type sparrow that had put on weight for the role.
2 points to Linda. Jeremy, who was full of hot air and way off course?
Oh, I don't know.
Right, Alan.
Richard Branson.
This is two Krauts who flew from Dortmund to Dundee on the Rudolf Hess Memorial Expedition. Miraculously, they weren't shot down by the RAF. You know this, Jeremy.
Oh, I saw it on the news.
Stop pleading ignorance.
A balloon crashed into some pylons. Is that it?
Balloon full of Jerry's.
Right.
And the RAF rescued.
Oh, so it was one of theirs?
Yeah, one of theirs.
Right. I grew up in a small village called Mitchett in Surrey, and during the Second World War...
Oh, blimey,
it's
me nan!
I'll thank you to hold your tongue, young lady, if you went any of my quality street. During the Second World War, Rudolf Hess was imprisoned in Mitchett in Surrey. And since then, the voting patterns have stayed remarkably similar. They've returned a Tory candidate at every general election since the Second World War. That's true. Not many people know that.
It's true.
Not many people care. God, it is hot in here, isn't it?
She's mad.
I'm afraid I'm a goner. You're going to have to go on without me. You feel sorry for Tony now. We've all been bad-mouthing him about him glowing like a pig, and yet it seems to be a normal condition in Brighton at the moment. This is like a seething menopause, this town.
I think on the count of three, let's all take our clothes off.
They are
expect it in Hove, because it's virtually a vast open-plan old people's home, isn't it? You just need to be a bit close there, really.
You've incurred the wrath of Hove.
No, Hove is lovely, but it is the sort of place where nothing happens that's louder than a scone being buttered.
Alan, which chickens crossed the road but didn't get to the other side?
It's a roundabout on the A143. It's got chickens on it. The road number is stuck in my head, but there's a flock of chickens that live on this roundabout. And the villagers want them to stay there because they think it's decorative, which means wherever this village is, life is rather quiet. But the council want the chickens removed because they're a health hazard and they interfere with traffic. I don't know how a chicken interferes with traffic. Perhaps drivers get out and interfere with the chickens. I don't know about life in Norfolk. I think it's where it was.
Norfolk County Council is threatening to evict a flock of chickens which has taken up residence on a roundabout in the middle of the busy A143 at Ditchingham. An official said the council would have nothing to do with animals on traffic management facilities. Genuine quote. He was promptly run over after ignoring a zebra crossing. Before we reveal the thrilling final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Andy.
This one is sent in by Felix Cawley, and it says, a New Zealand motorist was unknowingly snapped by a speed camera. Notification of a $40 fine arrived in the mail, together with the speed camera photograph. The New Zealand Police Association newsletter reports that the inventive motorist sent the police a photograph of two $20 notes. A few days later, he received a reply from the police containing a photograph of handcuffs.
Linda. This one's sent in by Peter Lim. It's from The Independent. A man trying to retrieve a mobile phone dropped in a lion's cage in Mexico was mauled when the phone suddenly rang and woke up the lion.
Alan, it's a little glimpse of immortality. It's the lead obituary in the Daily Telegraph. It says, Frank Shackleton Fergus, who has died aged 89, was the first man to X-ray a duck-billed platypus.
Was he also the last?
People think the platypus is a duck, but it's not, it's a fish.
Thank you all. Now let's look at the final scores. Andy and Linda have 15 points, but Alan and Jeremy, this week's winners, with 18. Before we leave you, here's an extract from the magazine of St. Margaret's Episcopal Church in the Scotland Newlands.
St. Peter's Church is a Victorian Gothic Revival building, complete with a landmark spire and octagonal baptistry, but the congregation dates back to the mid-18th century.
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news group were Alan Curran, Andy Hamilton, Jeremy Hardy and Linda Scott. The chairman was Simon Hargett, and the news was led by me, Brian Perkins. The sermon script was written by George Coles, Dave Cohen and Tom Jameson, and the producer was Lucy Armitage.